be the thing you don't see, right? If you don't see something, my very crass, you know, black woman motto is black women are just like, fuck it, I'll do it. That's pretty much what it was. Yep.
You are now listening to the Dreaming of Freedom podcast on the Two Cents FC Network.
All right, so still just having a little bit of technical difficulty, no problems. I'm very used to that over here, so it's all good. It's all good. But Scott, you know, one thing that's kind of resonating with me with what you said was kind of being around HBCUs and seeing other Black people, particularly Black women, do things that we usually don't credit to Black women, right? Like we usually kind of separate Black women from science, right? From engineering, all of these things, but you're seeing it, you know, growing up around HBCUs. So I'm sure you had a similar experience just growing up around HBCUs, seeing Black people on a regular, right? Like with PhDs behind their name, right? So yeah. Like one thing, you know, that like the first thing that my teacher or my professor rather at FAMU told me, first day of class at FAMU, he's like, the one thing that you all need to learn how to learn to appreciate while going to an HBCU or just being around HBCU landscapes is the fact that you're going to be taught by Black doctors, right? You're going to be taught by Black engineers. You're going to be taught by, you know, Black dentists, right? Black professionals in the field, and not just professionals, but at the highest degree, right? And so, I think that's, you know, it's reflected in how you, approach Shea Butter. It's reflected in how you approach Black women players, right? You don't assume anything about them, right? You kind of approach them with the kind of holistic life they have, right? And with Sills, with you, you know, growing up and talking about, you know, spirituality and healing, right? Again, it's also reflected in Shea Butter, just the amount of care that you all, apply to what you all are doing in terms of how you speak to players, how you speak to, you know, how you move, right, in the world. It's very careful and thoughtful on a level that we really don't see throughout the coverage of the game, right? And so we were wondering, kind of just if you can talk to us a little bit about how Shea Butter itself got started, right? What is the origin story? Please, please, please tell us how you came up with the name Shea Butter FC. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant name. So just talk to us a little bit about, you know, how y'all started Shea Butter.
It's your turn, because I have to do this every time.
Okay. It goes down in the, that sounds terrible. I was going to say it goes down in the DMs, but
you're not about to say that, because that sounds crazy.
That's not what it means at all. But no, seriously, of the two of us, Guy is better at like speaking up, right? So I probably talk more, but she's better at that. She reached out and she was like, hey, I think we think alike in terms of just what we're seeing from a football perspective, right? Particularly how they treat Black players. I think this was off the heels of Player of the Year, US Player of the Year award. Like 2020. So it's pandemic, right? Everybody's online. And yeah, so she reaches out and she's like, I guess we're making sure we're both like real people and we're not terrible humans and all of this stuff. And so we do. We end up chatting and realizing we have a lot of common backgrounds, everything else. And we're like, maybe we should do a podcast. Cool. We have no idea what that entails, right? We've never really done podcasting.
Right.
So Grego from FTC reaches out and he's like, do you all know each other in real life? Like, yeah, we do. He's like, cool. I think y'all should start a podcast. Like, he's like, I think you all have good chemistry and you have something different to say. And so working with him in particular, so shout out to him. He said, as he will tell you, he's like, I was right about that one. Like, he's very proud. He's like, I was right about that one. But really helping us get set up. So it took several months. We got equipment. We did all of that stuff. We started on Zoom in April 4th, 2021. It's almost 2 years. And we put a script together. I can't even remember what our working title was. Shea Butter FC is a playoff of Shea Butter Bombs. And my very scatterbrained, anxiety-ridden mind was watching a U.S. women's game. And I'm pretty sure it's a Kristen Press goal. It might have been a Crystal Nine goal. But one of them hit a golazo and I screamed, "That's a shea butter bomb." Like, I just screamed it in my room. And I was like, "That's the name of the show." Literally. I was like, "That's the name of the show." So I was like, "Sky, what do you think of Shea Butter FC?" Perfect. Because I wanted something, that was clearly Black, but didn't necessarily hit you over the head with it, right? Like, it's a very culturally specific reference.
Yes, if you know, you know.
Exactly. And so I was like, okay, people will know it's us, right? We don't have to tell them. That's really what I wanted. And so it stuck. Like, nothing else sounded like that. And so, yeah, we launched our first episode in April. And it took us a while to find our footing. Like, there's some things we did that didn't stick. But there are a lot of things that we did that did stick.
Right.
The music, we really wanted the music.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, that was incredibly important to us, because I think that's a really easy way to put our culture into spaces.
Right.
And it's who we are. We had to be authentic. And I think that was one thing we were like, we're going to be authentic, right? We're not trying to affect our voices. It's hard for me to turn my work voice off sometimes, but... you know, just being ourselves and being who we are, we knew there was nothing else in the space like that.
Yeah.
And then I think the other really big thing was always, well, what about diaspora, right? Shout out to them, by the way.
Yep.
But this very real mentality of there can only be one Black thing at a time. And we were just like, very different shows, right? And we get along with them swimmingly. We've talked to them pretty much every day.
Yeah,
for sure.
We got a whole separate group chat. We're
very different people. Our running theme when we started was they're Martin and we're Malcolm, right? Like, we're doing the same thing and we're presenting it very differently.
Love that. Love that.
And because of the spaces that they work in, though, I think they say a lot more now, like, right, there's things they can say that we can't, and vice versa. So we were all cool. We were like, there's room for everybody, and we're offering different perspectives, and that's remained true, right?
Yeah.
And we have each other's backs, which is always really nice.
Right. It's always amazing when
people... Yeah.
It's always amazing when people don't realize we talk to each other. Yeah. And then I know at the NWSL draft, it's like a lot of people, it didn't click. Like, we're all friends.
Yeah, we're friends.
Virginia. But yeah. So like, we talk to each other. So yeah, we end up, you know, breaking down and connecting when things go on. We've done plenty of crossovers and stuff, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Anybody can pop in this podcast cast game.
I think that's also important for people to see, right? Like, that more than one thing can exist is speaking to the same subject, because it's certainly true when you're talking about white players in soccer, right, or anything else. Like, there's multiples of that, and nobody questions that. Even in women's soccer, there's like five shows that do the same thing, right?
They had the same title.
Exactly.
They pretty much do the same work, and nobody questions it. And so, I think our motto is, or certainly my motto is, be the thing you don't see, right? If you don't see something, my very crass, you know, Black women motto is, Black women are just like, fuck it, I'll do it. That's pretty much what it was. Yep. So, like, we didn't see it. And so we were like, well, we can do this. Yeah. I don't think at the time we realized how much work would go into it. And we could start seeing ourselves hit milestones like, oh, okay, this episode, sorry, y'all, it's I Live Across from the Fire Station. We can start to see incremental change, and I can sort of pinpoint certain episodes where I'm like, oh, that, like, our audience grew. I'm very bad at keeping track of that stuff. Sky and Newbie are better at that. But like, I think there are some like watershed moments, and people listened for all sorts of reasons, some good, some not so good, but people listened, and we were right. Like, I think the stories that need to be told, the things that need to be said, we tend to say it, and that's gotten us into some very interesting spaces in the past 2 years, for sure. But I'm enjoying it, and honestly, I try not to take it for granted that there's things that Little Sills would have loved, right, that I get to do now because of this show that we started. Like, we went to a national team game, and I just sat there. I was like, holy crap, I'm covering a national team game right now. Like,
or talking to old U.S. Women's National Team players. Right. Or Black, and they like literally go, we listen to your show and have whole conversations.
Kim Crab listens to our show. Like, that was trippy for me, you know?
Or even Angela, you can just straight up looking at me and going, like, I listened to the stuff you said, and being like, oh, shit. Idols,
right? Like, there's not a lot of Black midfielders, and midfield's my favorite position. And so, like, I'm like giddy, you know? Like,
Of course.
You know, like, it is, and they're, for the most part, we have had good experiences with all the people we've been able to interview, thankfully. Current players, former players, staff, all of it. And so Black coaches listen to our show, like, that we really admire and respect. And yeah, it's just, I think for the most part, it's doing what it's meant to be doing. And some of that shifted and grown.
Yeah.
In terms of community building and other things. Right. But yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, one thing I love about the name, right, Shea Butter, is, I mean, exactly what you said, right? It's culturally specific, right? Like Toni Morrison has this piece on YouTube where she's talking about her writing, right? And the white gaze, right? And where she's like, yo, like I write in a way where I don't need to explain certain things, right? Because if you're Black, then you know what I'm talking about, right? Exactly. And I think the name Shea Butter FC just captures that so perfectly. It's just, you know, again, if you know, you know, right? But it's just very, you know, it's specific to Black people. It's specific to Black women, right? It's just a very, like, beautiful name, right, to kind of capture everything that you're doing.
Putting me in anything with Toni Morrison just made my day. So,
like, right. Listen, y'all are out here doing the good work.
She's my, Toni's one of my heroes. Like, that's all I'll say.
Of course. You pulling
out the interview? I know exactly what interview you're talking about. Okay?
It's a great interview.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like, obviously you guys are famous, like, that we don't need to, like,
hold on.
I mean, you guys have had incredible interviews with players, coaches, you know, you guys have definitely made a stamp in not just women's soccer, I think just in soccer in general. So, you know, we applaud you for that. But with all those experience, what do you think the most rewarding experience has been with Shea Butter, and what has been the most challenging experience?
I guess challenging. Let's start with challenging first. I think when we got in, I mean, we figured stuff was bad, but then there's things we found out immediately, within months, where we had players reach out to us asking for help, other entities asking us for help, where we're like, oh shit, so that's bad. Because there's things you think you know, but then when you learn, understanding how systemic stuff was, and problematic was, I think that was pretty jarring. And it's challenging because it's like, you know, we go through shit as Black people, in our different professions, where there's the current thing that crosses, that kind of connects, is it's the white supremacy. And then what the hell does it look like in the field you're in? Seeing some stuff where it's clear they didn't have support was pretty jarring. And then seeing how it was impacting, you know, a lot of these players are younger than us. We're kind of seasoned antiques. Seeing that stuff and then really being disturbed that, like, these are little kids. These are still young women, young people, and they don't have support. Like, I can't imagine some of the shit they're having to go through. I think that was a challenging thing.
Yeah, I think I'm a sky on that, right? Like, again, as somebody who's seen her parents go into the fire, so to speak, and dealing with systems of abuse in particular, and all the ways that can play out, particularly in super intimate setting, like a religious setting. But in many ways, I think soccer is that too, right? Like, you have particularly the coach-player relationship, right? There's a power dynamic there. There's all sorts of things there. And I think just how insidious it is in this sport. Like, I worry about our kids. I really do. Because the adults who are talking about these things only now were once kids who were talking about, you know, these things, and nobody was listening. So I think that's been jarring, if not unexpected, because that's usually how systems of abuse, particularly when you set it up that way, to protect the people doing the harm. That tends to be how it plays out. So in some ways, I'm very grateful for that background. But it's still very upsetting. And I think frustrating for me has been trying to really have these conversations and turn them into actions when people do not understand it's a problem. I think particularly talking about the racism in this sport, right? And all the ways that plays out, who it affects, from fans to staff, to who you hire as a coach, to players and their safety, their nutrition, like the little day in and day out details, and all the ways that in life racism affects that, and why wouldn't it in football? And I think changing that, right? Because the marketing would say that you're marketing to a very certain demographic. And that's certainly racist, right? Like, mm-hmm. like all of the things, and it limits the way you think, right? It's a very limited worldview. And people are very comfortable in that worldview, and there are people making a lot of money off that worldview. And so really having the conversations to change that when you're talking to mostly people who benefit from the way it's not working for everybody else. I think I find that very frustrating. And having to repeat myself over and over again. Right. And we've had some breakthroughs, right? Like the commissioner came up to us and was like, okay, I heard you. Did it take a few times? Yes. But like, I think doing that, and for me being vulnerable is actually really hard, but I think in this setting, again, particularly when it comes to young people, particularly young Black people, it's the hill I'll die on. And so being able to speak up on behalf of somebody, I think, has allowed me to say things that I wouldn't on my own behalf. And so, yeah, I find that deeply frustrating, but it's also pretty rewarding, right? I think the big reward has been players have come to us directly and told us exactly how that's helped, right? What we said matters, right? They're yeah. they are listening, and they are so glad we exist that we are giving voice to players who've never really had a voice before, and we're speaking mm-hmm. to the problems that Black women have, and that includes Black players, right? Are the things we see that other people don't see, and we can name it. Mm-hmm. And players are like, yes, I've been doing this for a decade, and you're the first person to say it.
Yeah.
And just how isolating and lonely it's been in that sport. And why they stick together is because they're the only ones who understand each other. And so I think for me as a Black woman, being able to connect with Black women in that way, regardless of status, whatever, because I mean, it's big name players. It's every, yeah. you know, it's utility players, it's yeah. squad players, it's college, it's youth, mm-hmm. it's pro, it's international, right? Like, I think people would be very surprised about who some of the people are.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
seriously, have said it directly to us. And I think that lets us know, okay, we're not, you know, gaslighting ourselves here. Like, this is a real problem. And
right.
I think it sucks that they have to go through it, but I'm also glad that we exist, Diaspora exists, some other shows exist that can finally speak to that. And that to me has been the most rewarding thing, is having the trust of Black players. It's why it's the thing I will defend with my life, pretty much. So yeah.
I was gonna say that, and then also rewarding is helping, you know, as we've gone from just being a voice to then creating the change, helping people facilitate their dreams and get the access, the shit yeah. that never has happened. So watching Nubia and Georgia evolve yeah. and yeah. what they wanted to do, because they approached us. Well, we approached Nubia first, but Georgia rolled up on us. Right. And so that's how they got a part of the team. But watching them evolve over the last year, shit. And yeah. watching other people get access or feel empowered to do stuff they weren't going to do. You know, we've had players who are now starting podcasts and stuff and said we were influenced. You know, it was part of, or getting to a point where even people doing supporter groups and stuff, you know, they're feeling inspired to go forth and go be, you know, it's all about trying to help people get access. I get two shits about money. Now, I would love to get money. And
I would like the money too. Yes, yes, and.
But I'm saying that, yeah, that's, yeah, I would like to be comfortable in what I'm doing so I could do this full time. But also, it's about bringing access and opening the doors and knocking down the gates, yanking down the gates, and building people to get access, because everybody should be able to access this game, do what they want to do with this game in whatever capacity, and feel welcome and feel their authentic self. So it's been pretty cool. You know, even hearing, you know, even watching, I think also watching where my mom used to be like, soccer's a white sport, to her now being like, I would like to watch a soccer game with you. Yeah. That evolution, you know, even my friends who got kids now who are playing, we're like, yo, I listen to your podcast. Yo, I want to talk about soccer. Like, you know, that evolution that's evolved to, you know, actually caring, getting to the point where people see themselves. So yeah. I think that's been the rewarding part of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, for me, watching someone like Nubia flourish, right, always had the talent, they just needed an opportunity, yeah. and us being able to provide that, like that, if we do nothing else, like that's been the reward. Like, we're literally creating access. And I think that that's the point, right, in a sport that's been, you know, historically tight, you know, gatekeep. their mm-hmm. access. And so absolutely. I think really getting us and helping redefine what media is in these spaces.
Right. Because I'm not a journalist.
It's not traditional, you know, capital J journalism, so to speak. Right. Because a lot of people, particularly women's soccer, did not go that route because that's not who gets to cover it, right? So we're coming from these different backgrounds. And so just trying to diversify that and put ourselves in different spaces so people who look like us understand that there's a space for you. There's a possibility for you. If you can see it, you can be it. Representation's not the only thing, but it for damn sure matters. And so I think just putting that out there and trying to encourage other people, particularly other young Black people coming through, who really want to do this. Because you know, my joke is Nubia's going to run everything before long if they want to. So yeah, I think and just doing more outreach in that way, and we bringing some other people on, you know, getting Black DJs out there and getting them access and really helping build community, right? And doing it organically. We're doing this at a grassroots level, and it's not easy. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
But I think in the long run, it'll matter. It'll matter. And this sport is for everyone, and we want them to mean it, and we want to hold people to that.
And not just the Black people or people that you're comfortable with, all the people.
Yeah.
Right. So. Right. Exactly. No, I love that. You know, I mean, I think a lot of y'all, I mean, both of y'all are, you know, well, first of all, you know, shout out to Nubia, shout out to Georgia, shout out to the whole Two Cents fam, you know, just doing great work in terms of, you know, expanding the culture, expanding this Black soccer space. You know, we gotta keep building, right? And we're all building together. So shout out to everyone involved with Two Cents FC. But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, the both of you are kind of have kind of touched on it in terms of the kind of challenges, you know, with Shea Butter and kind of, you know, seeing all of the just the unfortunate ways in which, you know, women players are, you know, are being treated by, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of personal treatment by the coaches or more general treatment by the federations, right? In your opinion, what is the one thing that in terms of women's soccer, what is the one thing that U.S. soccer has gotten right? And what is the one thing that U.S. soccer needs to improve on? And then also we can think about that on the international level, right? Like in terms of women's soccer internationally, right? What is one thing that seems to be going right? And what is one thing that seems to be going terribly wrong, right? Thinking here of the recent protests in France and Canada, right, Nigeria, Jamaica, right, in terms of the women's players critiquing and protesting their federation. So what's one thing that's going right? What's one thing that's not going so right?
So the one thing I think U.S. soccer has gotten mostly right is like overall health, like nutrition. And like facilities, right? So that's not really the complaint, right? Like our fields are pretty good, right? Even at a youth level, it's not like games aren't going to get canceled because the pitch is in bad condition.
Except Segra.
Well, yeah, and we don't play there anymore, right? Like that was sort of the last holdout. So I think those like giving it that professional treatment, playing at big stadiums. I think there's something to having separate stadiums for the women, but I also understand that that's not always viable in certain cities. So for like, OL gets to play at Lumen, same as the men, right? Same as the Seahawks, all this other stuff. So really being able to, highlight that, and the fans have shown that it's worth it, right? Games have been selling out, season ticket purchases are up, people go to games, you know, hashtag go to games campaign that Andre started. So I think in that regard, the support for it exists, and like the physical support in that on that level exists. And I think that's something we've done really well. What we could do better is so much.
Yeah, I know.
Right. We've come a long way, but there's a long way to go. Right. So, yes, I acknowledge like historical collective bargaining agreement, particularly on the national team level, but also within our league, our first CBA, free agency. I have my feelings about the draft, but at least free agency gives people some autonomy and some decisions over their lives and their career. So yeah, I think that they've done a lot of things well in that regard. I mean, I think the biggest thing is you've got to weed out the abuse first, right? Like you can't do anything else until you get the predators out of the game.
Facts.
At all levels. And I think to do that, we haven't completely scratched the surface, right? There's only so much the Yates report could cover. She was really honest about that. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a lot of work to do, and I don't think it's a either or. I think we have to do them at the same time. But I think that the first thing is you've got to get the harm doers out. And then we can work on that infrastructure. But I think pay to play is a really big issue, right? And access and how people have paths to make a career out of this if they want to are the things that we need to tackle. And I think in order to do that, we have to tackle all of the other ills in the world that find their way into football, right? So racism, sexism, xenophobia, all of these other things that I think limit who we call in, who we let into this sport. I think that's certainly a U.S. problem. But yeah, I think facilities and like overall health, nutrition, the things that we're really good at, help set an example for the world.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the bad. I thought you were going to say this, but the tenacity, the intensity, the continued focus to remain white and market white, and then at the expense of being, there is no reason the U.S. soccer on the women's side should not be whooping everybody's ass in 2023, left and right. I'm talking about putting 15-20 on France at full strength with a good coach, because we have that deep of a talent pool. But they are so obsessed with being white in the marketing. And like we said, marketing impacts in people's pockets because they don't get the same opportunities. We get crazy FIFA scores and for the NWSL edition in the FIFA, like all kinds of stuff. You got the same people getting called in for awards and they got just made points off of PKs. Totally ignoring the actual league MVP. Like, you got who's black. Like, it's all kinds of stuff with this tenacity to be white and not market in a country that's actually largely black and brown now.
Exactly.
Is the wildest thing. And it comes at the expense of what's on the field, who you hire, all this stuff that is just infuriating. And then it keeps kind of funneling where you have people thinking soccer in the United States is not for them, where you got, I literally know, I have friends who are black who watch soccer. They don't entertain NWSL, MLS, US soccer, nothing, because they don't feel connected to it, but they will watch stuff around the world. And so it's like that stuff, that's kind of that tenacity to want to remain white and not acknowledge other diversity is the wildest thing that's fumbling money bags. And then I think the good would be, I mean, in tandem, more so, I guess, because people kicked in the door, actually playing the talent. They've kind of been forced into it. They're having to play black and brown talent. That actually kind of doing it. And so, I mean, I guess that's the good. Because otherwise, yeah, it's just the nutrition and facilities. Other than that, you know, it's just like they fucking up too much in the ways of trying to be white. So I'm struggling to find goodness for them. I need to do better.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very much at a crossroads, and I think, I don't know, I catch a lot of grief for this because I'm probably more pessimistic than most. I just think our way of doing it isn't going to work anymore, and I think I'm frustrated because, like, I don't think we make it past the quarterfinals, right? Which would for us be horrible because we've always made it to the Final Four. We've never finished lower than third. And I know that the refrain is, oh, the rest of the world is caught up. It's not just that, though. The rest of the world has better coaching.
Yep.
The rest of the world doesn't fear us anymore.
Right.
Other teams have won things now. They've tasted what it's like. And they're taking it seriously. And like, our talent isn't superior enough anymore for that to be the thing. Like, we need good coaching, we need tactics, we need all of the actual football stuff that we've neglected, I think.
Right.
And I think in terms of the talent pool, I don't think they have a choice, right? Like, I think they'll hold on for this cycle, or at least through the World Cup. But if you watch the U20s, right? And again, obsessively, I watch these things. But if you watch the U20 teams in the US, they look like us. Like, it's not, mm-hmm. the talent coming isn't, and I get, you know, I'm like, oh, you hate, I don't hate Alex Morgan, right? But like the talent doesn't look like that anymore. It doesn't. And in many ways, the system was set up so that it did, right? It probably didn't look like that then either, but we're talking about a different time. But you're at the point now where, and we could talk about access, right? Because even then, a lot of the Black and brown talent still comes from money, because that's how you, it's what you have to get in. They've beat the system. Like, they've beat this system that was set up to keep them out. It doesn't matter anymore, right? And there's more than one path now. And I think the next big thing, unlike the men, is going to be the dual nationals, because I think we've been really arrogant in thinking we don't have to go after anybody not named Katarina Macario anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And we've let several really talented dual nationals walk because we're not serious. And so we're not going to win without them, right? And I think that is also going to make us have to confront some things in terms of how we view players. Our scouting is terrible, right? Like, we don't invest in scouting. We don't actually look at the players and the talent. We don't build our systems around the talent that we have and the advantages that we have. But the truth of the matter is the talent coming, and part of why I'm so passionate about it, it looks like us, right? Or it looks like Maria Sanchez. Like, it doesn't, it's not white players anymore. It's just not. And I think U.S. soccer is fighting like hell to resist that. And I think the loss is what triggers the change. I don't think they have any excuses if we don't make it. And I know the players are going to get blamed, particularly the young Black players, which is sort of my fear. But yeah, I think they're going to be forced to change. And I'm trying to, you know, give them a few pointers so it makes their life a little easier. We'll see if they listen. But like, that's coming, and you can listen or not. But like, it's coming, and CONCACAF is coming. It's like the teams are getting better. Mm-hmm. So imagine if they had funding. Imagine if Haiti or Jamaica actually had funding.
Yep.
Right, and Amarley wasn't funding Jamaica's national team. Like, and, you know, that's coming though, because the money's coming, and the 2026 World Cup is coming, and so all of that's going to change up, and I don't think people are ready for it, but we'll keep yelling.
Yeah. So I coach girls at the high school level. And I see very much, and most of my girls are inner city school girls, a lot of them from downtown Miami, Alapata, Liberty City, those type of neighborhoods. And I see so much. We're really fortunate that we're able to keep costs down. But from my experience, you know, coaching, and I think it's the same with boys, say youth soccer, I feel like it's so heavily skewed towards and set up for the success of like white, wealthy suburban kids.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you think at the grassroots level, at the youth level, what has to change right off the bat to kind of shift the paradigm from catering to those white suburban neighborhoods to catering to those in the inner cities, to Black and brown communities?
Mm-hmm. To actually drop all those costs and fees and stop this mess where you kind of funnel people into clubs. Actually, we're going to have them on our podcast at some point. But like, what's happening in the lower level leagues where they actually fund and pay for stuff. But having that just be free, like, it should literally, to play soccer, it just takes a damn ball and you don't even need no goals. You can make fake goals. You can put some cartons out there, rocks, whatever. It literally doesn't take all that. So to be one of the most expensive sports in this country is the wildest thing to me. You know, I wasn't paying all that for no basketball. I wasn't paying all that to go. You don't have to pay all that to play American football. You know, flag football ain't that much. Hell, it's lacrosse that much. You know, it's like you're paying so much money to play soccer. It's taking it, you know, taking people out of it. And even when we look at the national team, like Naomi Grummer, she kind of slipped into it. Same thing with Megan Rapinoe. If you want to look at a white player, she was never supposed to be playing soccer, but she stumbled into it. You can go down the list, and when you hear people's stories of how they got into the game, you know, most of these people had to kind of get sponsored, paid for, stumble into to actually play, and it shouldn't be like that. But actually dropping the cost down, making them go away, because I'm like, where is the money going? Making it actually affordable. I also think where it should be a way to get to become professional, or go from being amateur to professional, where it's similar to other sports. I vividly remember being in high school and predominantly Black high school. I actually had a lot of immigrants who were Black, like South Indian or Black from other Caribbean countries whose parents played professionally. And so they thought you had to play in high school to get seen. You know, I have a friend, he didn't go to Mace, he went to Grady because that was the only place that had boy soccer. Mm. We didn't have it at high school, but that wasn't how you got seen to get effectively recruited in 2004. And so this actually making it clear that you can go, you can actually be seen in high school, you get seen on club, actually having it fair and accessible, and making it clear how you get recruited goes a long way. But I think just reducing the cost so that people can play would go a long way in making it accessible.
Yeah, it's a barrier, right? Like, it's, we've heard many stories, right? We work with people who were like, I told my parents I wanted to quit because I knew they couldn't afford it. Yeah. Like, that should never be why somebody stops playing football. And I think it's very telling, like, in this country, we'll never, as it's currently constructed, we'll never have a Pele, we'll never have a Maradona, because people from those backgrounds can't get access to what is best, right? In every other country, they have academy systems where no matter how much you make, the better you are, the less you pay, right? Because they pay for you. It's an investment. We struggle to invest in this country in general, right? Again, we talk about education. People are mad about a free lunch for everybody in Minnesota right now. Like, that's where we are. We don't invest in our youth. We don't invest in our children. We think we're doing them favors, as if they're not little people who just need help, right?
Yeah,
right. And so I think, right, it's the arbitrary barriers, because none of the barriers that exist are natural, right? It's very much intentional. And parents and kids, not just money, but time, right? Like, if you're a minor in the NWSL, a guardian has to be with you until you're 18. I don't know many Black and brown guardians, right, who are in situations where they can take off work for two seasons to be with their 15-year-old. Like, that's not, even that's a barrier when you're talking about, oh, we've opened this thing up. Have you really, though? Right. Like, what are the rules around that? And so.
And opened it up for who?
Right, exactly. And so, again, that's the, can you afford to do it? Because that's really what it comes down to. And so, and meanwhile, the people who need that money, right, can't meet certain criteria potentially. And so, yeah, I just think it's the barriers, right? It's these very intentional barriers that have been put in the way, particularly for youth who don't come from money, right? And that could be any race, you know, whatever, gender, whatever. And I think that's the overwhelming thing. And coaches that look like you, speak like you, who love the game, I think there's just that network needs to be fortified and invested in as well, right? Because as an education, if any student of color sees any professor of color, any teacher of color, they're likely to do better because they see that somebody who can speak to the similarities of their struggles is in that space. And I think it's the same thing for football. If you see it, right, or you see somebody who was able to get past those barriers, it's a motivator. And so I think those are the two big things.
I mean, I was also going to say, like, if you actually listen to how many NFL, WNBA, a lot of NBA players actually play soccer and wanted to play soccer but quit because of money. That should be telling. Because I know people every World Cup love to go. If they're best players, well, they couldn't afford it. They had to play whatever thing. And so, I mean, in WNBA in particular, how many of them play soccer and quit to play basketball because of the money thing is insane. And we don't talk about that enough. And we should, because like I said, soccer is probably the most popular sport in this country. Is the most outpriced because they try to follow NFL models. Which, I mean, if we look at the NFL, for example, they still aren't, while they make a lot of money, a lot of the players don't get to share. And so now they're getting mad. NFL players are pissed that they're watching NBA players sit on the bench and get paid $20 million a year when it's like they ain't never going to see $20 million in their lifetime, you know, when it all came back to how stuff's broken down. And it's like soccer could have been blowing. We could be getting paid millions of dollars just breathing if this was marketed correctly and actually accessible. But, you know, people like being broke, clearly.
You know, I think this is the importance of of a podcast like Shea Butter, right, of the whole Two Cents, you know, cultureverse is to kind of shed light on the ways in which, right, these ideas, right, I mean, Sills, I mean, how you broke down, right, the barrier about, you know, minor players, right, like that possibility is limited, right, when you understand Black families, when you understand the structure of goddamn capitalism and the ways in which Black people got to work, right, they can't just take off like that, right, and so this is the importance of, I think, the cultureverse and just kind of these Black voices, right, in a predominantly white space, right, just to kind of break open a lot of this kind of narrow-minded thinking. So as we kind of, you know, wrap up a little bit, what is kind of one piece of advice that you both want to share, right, to help kind of expand this black soccer culture? Anyone that's interested in wanting to expand this Black soccer culture, whether it be in the podcast space, the writing space, the supporter culture space, do you have one piece of advice to give anyone that's trying to build out this space?
I'm gonna go. Fine. It's an annexed. So believe in yourself always, because what you, and follow your intuition. Because I think belief is the biggest thing, because you get gaslit all the time. Because people like to question you because you Black. Mm-hmm. But then on the, or whatever you are, you're right. Believe, go forth and achieve. But then also find your community, because community is a big thing. It will get you through and help you navigate those gaslighting and bullshit situations and the ups and downs of what happens. But keep going. I mean, we've only existed. We ain't even been 3 years. Well, we will be 3 years. Wait, that's a lie. We will be two. But we ain't even that old, and we feel old. Like, you know, it can happen real quickly in this soccer thing. It's gonna happen real quickly. And so just believe and go achieve, and you will make change.
Yeah. Wow. Mine is probably in a similar vein. Your voice matters, your lived experience matters. You know more than you think you do. You know more than you think you do, right? I think for me, I don't know. For me, I will always fight on behalf of others. So it's the bleeding heart in me. So I think that's always going to keep me motivated. But yeah, I think my advice is to particularly young Black people trying to get into this space is lean on the people who are in it. Reach out. Like Sky said, community is everything. It's how we get through, for sure.
Facts.
But yeah, you are enough. Your voice is enough. I know the world has told you it's not, but it is. And if you need people to remind you, that's what community is for. So you are enough. The thing you want to share, the thing, the stories you don't see, the voices you don't see, you are enough. Be that. Then be that, and you figure it out as you go. It's okay. And mistakes are lessons. That's the advice I give my students. Mistakes are just lessons. Doesn't feel like it in the moment, but a mistake is just a lesson. So don't be afraid to make mistakes. That's it.
Love that. Love that. Love that. All right, so we got two more fun questions. Callie, you want to kick off the first one? I'll wrap it up.
Yeah, it's my personal favorite question. All right, so favorite food or restaurant? Could be where you're at now, back home, where you've been. Let us know.
Man, that's
You see, my Sky has some issue with In-N-Out Burger. Is that right?
Yeah, In-N-Out is terrible.
So thank you. Okay. I agree.
It's okay. I agree. It's terrible. Not, I don't seek it out.
It's the most overrated dining experience I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, it's terrible. My mom was so upset when I took her to one. Jesus. Yeah, it's terrible.
I don't really have a favorite spot.
Okay, so I guess a favorite.
Favorite spot or food?
Yeah. All right, favorite. Not because I can't have them no more. I love cheese sticks, but I'm lactose intolerant, and that'll kill me. But favorite spot? Nowadays, it is a quality chicken wing spot, because they gentrified Atlanta chicken wings and I'm upset. But quality, well-built, well-tasting chicken wing that's made. Very crispy fries. But then, I mean, if I could have it, like a really fire Trace Leches cake, you know, I'm going through it being like,
we got that here.
Yeah, I know. That's why I used to live in Miami.
What part of Miami did you live in, if you don't mind me asking?
I lived in Coral Gables, then I lived in West Miami, South Miami. Yeah.
Yeah, I lived in the Gables for a while, too.
Yeah. Nice. I lived on the edge of Coconut Grove. All right. So I'll put that perspective for you.
Okay.
I don't know. I like a lot of cuisines. Like, I like East Asian food, South Asian. Filipino food's really good, actually. But I think my all-time, like, comfort cuisine is probably Jamaican food. So,
what does that mean? What? Oxtails.
I mean, yeah, clearly. Curry, mostly anything. Jerk, mostly anything.
Beef patties.
I'm not gonna lie, the ruder the service, the better the food, usually. if I feel hate, like, that's how I know the food's gonna be good.
I wanna get cussed out when I walk in.
If they have it. If they have it.
That's true, too.
I wanna get cussed out. Why are you here?
I need to hear like teeth sucking, like, to really feel it. Like, it's gonna be good.
Yeah.
I guess Coley's out here is probably the best, but I'm not gonna lie, I think the East Coast has better Jamaican food spots. Yeah. So
actually there is a bomb spot. They might be near you. I gotta find them. They had bomb ass oxtails. I used to come to work. Okay.
I gotta find you. Gotta hook me up with that. But yeah, I think that's probably still my favorite cuisine, but I'll eat mostly anything once. Mexican food out here is really good too, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, probably that.
They have exclusively Jamaican food at the Black Heron tailgates these days. So
we gotta get down there, man.
I want a nice homemade beef patty, oxtails.
Jesus. Come on now. Come on. Hey, next tailgate. You already know what it is. Next time y'all down here, just say the word.
We gotta slide through this year, man.
Absolutely. All right, so last question. Y'all are brilliant. Y'all are brilliant in everything y'all do. Y'all are constantly encouraging the people to do their anti-racism work. What is something that y'all are reading right now as it relates to anti-racism, or just generally, like, what are you reading? Or what was the last thing that you read? Or what is, like, your favorite book, right? Like, what is something that really... Or favorite author, anything that has to do with books. What is your favorite? What's going on there? What's going on there?
Man, it's hard. Because I work in some areas that I can't have access to stuff. I was listening to Bell Hooks, but every time I listen to her books, I have to like stop and then have to go rewind. I was listening to audiobooks. Let me see. I actually want to check out some stuff by Flo Kennedy. Because I actually think we're on the same wavelength in terms of how she approaches activism with finding joy. But I don't know what I'm gonna get yet for that. I don't really got a favorite book. Cause like I'm one of them people, if I read it, I'm done. I'm a total engineer, so this is totally it's terrible. But I think the hardest thing I've struggled with talking to people about anti-racism stuff in the tech space is that people were like trying to go, well, I'm not racist or anything, or even encountering Black people who think they don't have to do the work. I liked what Dr. Ibrahim Kendi has as a book because it forces you to get out of your own headspace and look at the whole picture and confront it. I liked his book focusing on how not to be racist. Well, yeah, how to be anti-racist.
Right.
So that's a one for me. But yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Sills is the guru.
Am I? I feel like I'm so not well read compared to the rest of my family.
So I'm not well read and you lay off like 15 books.
No, I'm really behind on my reading, actually. I mean, I read like educational stuff just because it's part of my job. But things I'm not quite through Caste yet, but I want
to finish that
by Isabella Wilkerson.
Okay.
I really liked Warmth of Other Suns. Like, I thought that was a really good book. I'm really big on the Great Migration just because all four of my grandparents were a part of it. So,
hey.
Yeah, I'm very much fascinated by the whys, and I know there's stuff they didn't tell me, and because it's traumatic. So yeah, I'm really sort of in tune with that. And then shout out to Reverend Laura. She sent me some stuff from Reverend Will Gaffney, who's a Black woman minister. I forget which denomination. But just doing a series on like womanist and wading through the word, and just trying to get my mind right, you know, in the next couple of years, you know, in that work. And so I tend to listen to a lot of like women in the church and Black women in the church, and just trying to figure out sort of my politic around that. Is it, you know, that spiritual work matters to me. I try to do it well to make sure I'm being led in ways that are healthy for others as I try to do help work and service work. So just making sure that I'm good and that I'm okay and fulfilled. And then I try to read things that make me laugh because I find laughter to be very healing. And I watch a lot of comedies for the same reason. Like that's comforting to me. So I do that or listen to things on audiobook or listen to music. Again, music is very healing for me as well. Outside is very healing. So even though I'm in the middle of Los Angeles, I sit on the balcony and just take in the sights and the sounds of whatever nature is around me, even if it's a city. So being outside is really healing for me. So I try to do that every day. Sometimes it's cold and rainy, you can't do it. But yeah, that's what I do. And like I sit outside and listen to an audiobook or listen to music, just to try to recharge and be, but yeah, those are really things. And then like I said earlier, I always go back to like Tony and James and some others, like just the people who feed me and yes. Trying to look at those things in perspective. But like Tony matters to my life in ways that very few people do. And I'm really glad I got to share the planet with her for most of my life so far. But those are the people I sort of look up to or who help guide me, along with my grandmother and my mother and all of that. So always Tony. Always Tony. Yeah.
Always Tony, right. Love it.
So I was listening to Sisters of the Yam by Bell Hooks.
Okay.
Yeah. Black Women in Self-Recovery. That's actually a pretty good book. Like I said, I had to stop that quite a few times. And then I still have to listen to South to America by Imani Perry, Dr. Imani Perry. Like I had heard part of that in a discussion she did with Dr. Yababoy. I do need to read Cast. but yeah, I want to get into some restorative justice work type stuff. Because activism is draining is shit. So then how do you do that and feel empowered and then keep your shit your head? But yeah. I'm an engineer, so me reading and stuff is a lot. But if I'm coding and stuff, I listen to it.
Also, yeah. And also I love, you know, listen, animal videos are great. But if you got your babies and they're laughing, like send that my way. Like nothing heals me more than babies. Like I love babies. So
I mean, I watch HGTV.
I don't want to have any, but I love babies. Like they make me happy. Yeah. And so
I think me and Callie can help you.
Y'all got it on lock. I'll gladly snag a baby for a few hours. I give them back. That's part of the fun.
What's great with that is I also have videos that'll be like some great birth control for you. So
my sister handled that for me. She has four. I was like, I'm good.
I'm good. Straight on that, right?
Yeah, I'm good. She got it.
Oh man, that's what's up. Well, Sky Sills, you know, thank y'all for this time. I hear my baby screaming down the house right now, so it's probably the good time to dip. But thank you both for, you know, for everything, for sitting down, just chopping it up with us. You know, kind of giving us a side of Shea Butter that we may not have known before. So thank you. Can't thank you enough.
Yeah, y'all. Thank y'all so much, man.
Thank you.
No, this is dope. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, y'all. Take care.
All right.